Welcome to FedSoc Forums, a podcast of the Federal Society's Practice Groups. I'm Nate Kazmarek, Vice President and Director of Practice Groups at the Federal Society. For exclusive access to live recordings of FedSoc Forum programs, become a Federal Society member today at fedsoc.org.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Federal Society virtual event. My name is Marco J. Lloyd, and I'm Assistant Director of Practice Groups for the Federal Society. Today, we're excited to host a litigation update on DeMar v. Evanston, Skokie School District 65, featuring Kimberly Herman. Kim serves as Executive Director for Southeastern Legal Foundation, where she has worked since 2009. At SLF, she advances a liberty through litigation in federal and state trial and appellate courts on issues ranging from government overreach, free speech, property rights, and economic liberty. In addition to representing clients, Kim testifies before state legislatures, drafts model legislation, and regularly publishes legal articles. Her work is regularly covered by national media, and you'll frequently see her on radio, podcasts, and television. She earned her bachelor's at Wake Forest University and her JD at Georgia State University College of Law. If you'd like to learn more about today's speaker, her full bio can be viewed on our website, fedsoc.org. If you have a question at any point in today's program, please enter it into the Q&A function at the bottom of your Zoom window. We will do our best to answer as many as we can. Finally, I'll note that, as always, the Federal Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues, and all expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. With that, Kim, thank you for joining us today, and the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you for having me today. So today we're going to talk about one of Southeastern Legal Foundation's lawsuits, DeMar versus just District 65, which is a school district located in Evanston, Illinois. This is a fact-intensive case, and it has been going on for a very long time. And so I thought that what might make the most sense is to start with the facts, because without the facts, we really have absolutely no case here. The legal issues that we're going to talk about surround the Equal Protection Clause and Title VI. They're actually fairly straightforward. So we'll get into those a little bit at the end. And then I know this is a litigation update on specifically the DeMar case, but there has been a lot of action out of the Department of Education with Title VI, specifically launching investigations into other potential violations. And so at the end, before we do Q&A, I want to bring some of those to your attention, just to make sure that they're on your radar, especially if you're litigating these types of issues. So with that, let's dive into the story of Dr. DeMar. It starts 10 years ago in 2015. And this was obviously long before our country was talking about things like critical race theory, radical gender ideology. I know that it was years before even myself as a parent realized that we were going to be in the middle of our generation's biggest fight, which is to save America's schools for our children. The legal challenge and battle has now spanned three presidential administrations. But it really started back, like I said, in 2015, when District 65 released a strategic plan that set a goal that by the year 2020, its schools would be, quote, marked by equity. In just 2 years, by 2017, the school district had instituted programs, policies, training, and curriculum that began to actually reflect this commitment. Through some of the policies, the school district vowed to identify institutional racism, which it claims creates advantages for whites and oppression and disadvantages for people of color. It instituted a racial and educational equity policy in which the district committed itself to focusing on race as one of the first visible indicators of identity. This can be found on its website. It also made clear that it viewed equity as distinct from equality. In the district's definitions and words, it views equity, which is its key goal, to be about fairness, justice, and individuals getting what they need and deserve, and equality about sameness and treating everyone in an identical manner, regardless of their differences. Now, these definitions are significant because the school district here is committing itself to equity while at the same time rejecting the ideas of colorblindness and equality. And we're going to talk about some of the facts that show that. One thing I also want to mention that I probably should have said before I started diving into the facts is that some of these facts may seem far-fetched. They may seem exaggerated, but all of these facts are substantiated. They can be found linked in various complaint documents that we filed that we'll talk about when we talk about the legal posture of this case, or they can be found on the school district's website itself. They've all been permalinked. They can all be viewed. The school district puts all of this information out there loud and proud. So the school district, after instituting these policies beginning in 2017, they started requiring equity trainings of their teachers. They called this the Beyond Diversity Seminar and used the Courageous Conversations training program that if you work in this area, if you work in the K-12 space, you have no doubt heard of Courageous Conversations. In this program, it sets forth 4 agreements surrounding equity and racial issues and 6 conditions that all teachers and employees are expected to comply with as they take the lessons that they learn in this training and go out into the school district. We can't cover everything that's in these trainings. They're day-long trainings, multiple day-long trainings, excuse me. But they teach things like white people dominate conversations, that white people are loud, authoritative, and controlling, and it urges the white teachers to acknowledge their white privilege in these trainings. I give just those 3 examples to show that every single lesson in these trainings really does, as it's intended to, focus specifically on race, and not just on race, but on racial differences and why we need to be looking at skin color and treating people differently because of their skin color. After these trainings, the lessons continued through segregated staff meetings. Now, when we say segregated staff meetings, we're not talking about necessarily the voluntary affinity groups that in 2025, we actually tend to see that version of segregation in a lot of school districts throughout this country. This was actually mandatory racial segregation. So in these staff meetings, and there were multiple of these, I think by our count, there were at least 8 in one single school year. Staff were directed to go to different rooms based on their skin color. So in an email, and when you arrived at the training, the white teachers were told to go into one room, the non-white teachers were told to go into another room, and they were taught concepts of equity. They were taught about racial issues in these trainings. So we're not necessarily talking about a training about how to, you know, teach a certain method of reading to students or the Socratic method, right? We're talking about trainings on equity, DEI, racial issues. In these, the staff was told and asked to share stories about how racism has affected their life, automatically assuming that it had affected all of their lives. They were given surveys where they were asked and required to answer questions about what is their understanding of white fragility? What is the result of these affinity meetings? And how are you going to take those results out into your life and into the classroom? Some of these meetings also had segregated privilege walks. And so if you're not familiar with privilege walks, it's these are activities where all of the teachers or all of the participants are lined up and they're asked questions that kind of begin with because of your race and very specific questions about, you know, do you come from a two-parent household, income levels? Have you ever experienced microaggressions? Things like that, right? And then at the end, the hope of the facilitator, as we can see in the dialogue, is that there'd be a divide. And so you would have white teachers on one location in the line, Black teachers on the other, and then they have them take additional steps, and then they tell them that this is the color divide. So again, you're physically separating educators here by solely the color of their skin, with that being the intent of the exercise. So these are things that continued all throughout the 2017-2018 school year. They became known to the public at large. And in 2018, Peter Kersenaw, who at the time was the U.S. Commissioner on Civil Rights, sent a letter to District 65, putting them on notice that these activities expressly the segregation that was happening here were violating Title VI of the Equal Protection Clause, or Title VI of the Civil Rights Act and the Equal Protection Clause. Well, the school district's response was not to necessarily say, whoa, we didn't realize we were violating the law. Instead, they acknowledged that they were segregating by race. They defended the practice and, quote, said that this work is critical. And then after that letter was sent, they continued to have at least 7 more segregated staff meetings and affinity sessions that school year. So you can see that there's a pattern and practice, especially with respect to all of these teacher trainings and the staff meetings, segregating the teachers by race. So what was happening with the students during this time period? Well, District 65 was also having affinity groups for students, some of them as young as kindergarten, right? And remember, when we're talking about kindergarten, we're talking about 4, 5, 6 years old. They had a white affinity group in which the white students were taught about white privilege. They were taught that they were microaggressors, and they were taught that they needed to be allies to their friends of color. There was a, quote, black and brown students that identify as she, her, hers affinity group for kindergartners also. This continued all the way up through eighth grade. District 65 is a pre-K through eighth grade school district that serves about 8,500 students. And all of these 8,500 students were subject to these racially exclusive affinity groups. The privilege walks that I mentioned earlier were also occurring in the classroom. And District 65 instituted a Black Lives Matter week starting in 2018 that ran through 2022 as a specific week. It then moved to the full curriculum. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But the point of this week, according to District 65, was that they needed to ensure that their students understood that our country has a racist history that is grounded in white privilege, and that the students need to be activists and need to be actively anti-racist. Those are not my words. Those come directly from lesson plans that were used during BLM curriculum, and as I mentioned, can be found in the various complaints or on some of the District 65's websites themselves. To go through everything in this curriculum would take us, I mean, we could be here for hours and hours, and we only have about 35 minutes. So I just want to bring one of these lessons to light because it really is kind of a stark, it's one of those lessons that caught me off guard as a parent, because I never would have expected to see an activity like this in a classroom when we first got involved in this case. And in it, the students across pre-K through eighth grade, you see them reading a book called Not My Idea, a book about whiteness. In this book, they're taught that colorblindness is racist, that to treat everybody equally is a racist idea. And at the end of the book, there's an activity page with a white devil holding up a contract that binds you to your whiteness, and it gives you the right to mess endlessly with the lives of your friends of color. And it goes on and on and on. And then at the bottom of it, the children are expected to sign it. It is put forth as an activity page and was used in various classes based on the information that we have. This was happening in every subject. In math, we saw lessons on diversity and globalism. In PE, there were lessons on intergenerational Black families and Black villages. In science, there were lessons on Black women and being unapologetically Black. And in drama, there were lessons on Black villages and the nuclear family, in which the children were taught, quote, that it is important to disrupt the Western nuclear family dynamics. So as you can see, this was every subject, every lesson, every grade for an entire week, where the children were not being taught how to read, how to write, how to add. They were taught solely on issues of race and being separated through these lessons and being taught these ideas that that white people are privileged and Black people are oppressed. The last piece that I want to cover when we move on from curriculum, because again, we could talk for hours about it, is the discipline policy. So we've built upon, we have policies of the school district that put forth equity. We have teacher trainings. The teacher trainings lead to the curriculum. And then we have discipline policies of District 65. Now, the discipline policy that I'm going to talk about is still in existence today, but it specifically requires educators and administrators to consider race when putting forth disciplinary plans or disciplining students. It specifically makes the commitment to applying the discipline policies and practices as to not disproportionately impact students of color. And it requires the educators there to make disciplinary decisions based on race, cultural backgrounds, disability, and traumatic life experiences. So you can have two students who make the same exact mistake. You could have two students that are in a fight potentially with the same exact disciplinary history, and they are disciplined differently because of their race, cultural background, disability, or so-called traumatic life experience. So in June 2019, Dr. Demar, our client, who is a very brave drama teacher in Evanston, Illinois, she filed a complaint with the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights. The Department of Education spent about 18, 19 months investigating her complaint and ultimately issued a finding in 2021, in January of 2021, that District 65 did in fact violate Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. It found a couple of things. First, it found that there was intentional discrimination. So Title VI of the Civil Rights Act prohibits a number of things. Specifically with respect to this intentional discrimination finding, it prohibits schools that take federal funding from excluding people from programs, activities, or benefits because of their race. It also prohibits schools that take federal funding from providing a service or a benefit to a student that is different from what you would provide to another student because of their race. Now, the implementing regulations of those prohibitions specifically state that schools may not subject individuals to segregation or separate treatment in any manner related to his or her receipt of a service, a financial aid, or any other benefit related to the program. Here, what we're talking about with programs is education, it's training, it is the educational environment, right? And so the Department of Education found that because of the segregation that was happening in the teacher trainings, the privilege walks, and affinity groups among the students, that there was intentional discrimination happening in District 65. It also found that there was a hostile environment. So Title VI also prohibits racial harassment that creates a hostile environment. The standard is severe, pervasive, and persistent. And the harassment has to interfere with or limit an individual's ability to participate in a benefit or the services or activities, the same list that we just talked about, that's being provided by the school that's taking the federal funding. And so here, the Department of Education found that it was very concerned about the curriculum, about the policies and practices that were happening on a daily basis in District 65 that adversely affected the enjoyment, the legal term enjoyment, the use, the education of some aspects of the school's educational programs. So that's when you look at things in the entirety and taking all the facts that we talked about, plus many, many more, it found that it was severe because it was very bad, resulting in segregation. It was pervasive and persistent, happening all the time, every day, throughout all of the subjects and all of the grades. And so there was a hostile environment that had been created in violation of Title VI. The Department of Education made one final finding here, that the discipline policy that we just spoke about violated Title VI because it illegally directed staff to consider a student's race when evaluating a behavioral or discipline situation. So it made these three key findings, issued its letter of finding, and this was January of 2021, and then President Biden was inaugurated. And several days after the inauguration, our client, Dr. Demar, learned that the letter of finding had been withdrawn by the Department of Education. It did not close out the complaint at that time. At least it did not notify Dr. Demar or us that the complaint was closed out, but it withdrew that letter of finding, basically saying that the segregation and the hostile environment that had been happening was not considered to be a violation of Title VI anymore, right? The last part is our interpretation. It did not say that because it did not give formal notice of this. But that's where things stood in January of 2021. That is when we, Southeastern Legal Foundation, stepped in and on Dr. Demar's behalf, we filed a federal lawsuit in the Northern District of Illinois on Dr. Demar's behalf, alleging violations of the Equal Protection Clause, alleging intentional discrimination, and alleging a hostile learning environment. All of the facts that we just covered were stated in the complaint. That was the basis for the lawsuit. Again, this was filed in June of 2021. The school district, of course, filed a motion to dismiss on various grounds, and it sat there for quite some time. There were some changes in the courtroom. The judge who it was assigned to left the federal bench, got assigned to a new judge, and the new judge ultimately did dismiss our lawsuit without prejudice. In the dismissal order, he said that we could file an amended complaint with additional facts regarding standing. So specifics regarding what meetings Dr. Demar did attend and did not attend, and additional facts regarding the nature and purpose of federal funding. Here we're talking about the Title II funding that goes to the entire educational experience, including training of teachers. So we did just that. We filed an amended complaint in September of 2024. The school district renewed its motions to dismiss. We briefed it, and it's currently sitting before the judge right now. So why are we talking to you all about the case in June of 2025? If we did that in September 2024, why an update now? Well, an update now because we have filed a new complaint with the Office for Civil Rights of the Department of Education. In the fall, we were notified that the 2019 complaint was officially closed and dismissed. We appealed it, but it has since been closed. And so we filed a new renewed complaint, realleging all of the facts in the previous one and showing that since 2021 to now, all of these policies and practices have continued in the district. So staff meetings that are required, the courageous conversations beyond diversity training is still mandatory. When we're talking about what's happening with the kids and the curriculum, the BLM week was ended, and it was ended for the purpose of implementing the BLM curriculum into the entire year. So now it has been implemented into every grade, in every subject, in every day, in every lesson plan, pre-K through eighth grade, across the entire district is supposed to consider race in some way, shape, or form, or teach these lessons of equity. There continue to be affinity groups. There's at least five currently for students based solely on race, and there's many more for parents and families those ones are administered through the PTA from what we can tell, but they are done on school grounds and sanctioned by the school. The discipline program or policies continue. They have not been changed, and teachers are still required to expressly consider race. At a recent school board meeting that was with District 65 and its high school counterpart, District 202, the districts made clear that they were going to continue their plans to institute equity. When referencing President Trump's executive orders, that we're telling schools no more DEI, no more Equal Protection Clause violations, no more civil rights violations, that this administration won't stand for that. they stated that those were not, they did not consider those law. They told their constituents that they were not law, and that until a court makes a determination, they would not be following them. So that makes these this OCR complaint and the pending federal lawsuit even that much more important, because it's not just District 65, but many schools across the country, whether we're talking about Title VI or related Title IX issues, have made it very clear that they're going to continue to do what they want to do based on their interpretation of the law until a court tells them otherwise. So that's what brings us to this update today. Now, we filed that complaint, and the Department of Education has since, that was in April, it has since announced that it's has launched an investigation into District 65. So that investigation is ongoing. We are thankful that this administration is taking this seriously. There is no place for segregation in this country. There is no place for racial discrimination in this country. The Supreme Court has made this abundantly clear for decades and decades, most recently in SFFA versus Harvard, where it reminded us that our Constitution is colorblind and that Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 does not tolerate racial preferences. So we at Southeastern Legal Foundation are hopeful that our client, Dr. Demar, will ultimately get the resolution that she is looking for here, which is not money. There are no damages claims being brought in this lawsuit other than a nominal damages for $1, I believe, if I remember correctly. But she's not seeking damages. She just wants to stop from being forced to discriminate against her students. And she wants the discrimination in her school district to stop once and for all, because it is not only illegal and unconstitutional, but in her view, and in our view, it is wrong. So the administration is investigating this. They're also investigating a number of other similar claims throughout the country that I just want to bring your attention to, because if you're tracking this case, you should also be tracking these cases of some of our friends. Two of them come from Defending Education. There was an OCR complaint filed against the Chicago Public Schools dealing with academic achievement programs that exclude students based on their race. There is another one out of Fairfax County. This is in line with the TJ cases, where there's admissions policies that discriminate based on race. The Virginia Attorney General recently released a report saying that they found there were these violations, and Defending Education has filed a complaint, and the Department of Education has launched an investigation. The final one I want to mention to you is one that comes out of Wisconsin with Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. And they brought they filed an OCR complaint because there's a district prioritizing special education services to students based on racial priority groups. And the department has launched an investigation into that. I think we're going to see a lot more of these brought. It's important, if you're doing this kind of work, that these complaints be well pled, that you have your facts and ducks in a row. There has been the DEI portal. I don't know if the DEI portal is still ongoing, but these are distinct from that. These are full complaints. And the more facts that can be presented in these OCR complaints, of course, are going to give you a higher likelihood of the Department of Education actually launching investigations into these. Finally, there's a compliance requirement that has been put out by the Department of Education. All schools have to certify that they're complying with Title VI. And so that is kind of the final piece there. With that, I'm going to take a pause here. And if there are any questions, you guys are welcome to type them into the chat. I think I can see the chat, Marco. Let me see if I can pull this up. Marco might be able to see it. I don't know if there's questions there yet. But I'm happy to answer anything about these cases that you guys have about the legal posture or the facts. So, Marco, I don't know if you're there, if you can see any questions. I'll get the chat pulled up here. Q&A box. Let's see. Sorry, my Zoom box is hidden right now, which is not helpful. Let's see. Hi, Marco, if you could maybe talk about, maybe raise the questions here. I'm having a hard time getting the Q&A. Oh, here we go. having a hard time getting the Q&A box pulled up here. I apologize. Let me see. Oh, here we go. Sorry, my window is closed on me and I just found it. Okay. The first question here. Have you also referred the district's practices to the DOJ's Civil Rights Division? We have not done that yet. It was about 1 to 2 weeks of us filing the complaint. The Department of Education went ahead and launched its investigation. And so we're waiting to see what comes of that. And we do have the federal lawsuit pending, but it is certainly on the table and is a great suggestion to anyone who is dealing with these issues or litigating them. The next question is, have any parents joined as plaintiffs? No, we have not had any parents join as plaintiffs. This is something that we discussed back in 2021. And if we can all put ourselves in the mindset of, with the federal lawsuit, if we can put ourselves in the mindset of 2021, the world was a different place. There were many parents that came to us that were in Evanston, Illinois, and the surrounding areas that said, we don't want this. We want this to stop. We've had to pull our kids out of the schools. But they were all very scared to put their name on a federal lawsuit. Now, doing this every day, being in public interest law, we know the reality is that for the most part, when you bring these, you don't really see necessarily the retaliation that is expected or that is you might be concerned about. But we do acknowledge that Evanston, Illinois is a different kind of place when it comes to this. Our client has seen retaliation. When we first filed the lawsuit, there were rallies that were held against her in the public parks that had administrators from the school at it. These were live streamed on Facebook. They were covered by the local TV stations. She has had more people come out in support of her case, of course, in the area with notes and emails and reaching out to us. But they have been scared to do that publicly, given the environment. Now, 2025, we're in a different time. And so we hope that there's parents out there who would want to also raise their concerns. But for the most part, what we found is that those who do want to speak up about it have left the school district. Somebody says, we have a similar case in the U.S. District Court in Kansas. The curriculum sounds like it's the same or very similar. Do I know if the curriculum is affiliated? So I don't know the actual origins of the curriculum in D65 that they used, but these are lessons. What we do have and what we've linked in all of our complaints are actual D65 lesson plans. So they have been created by D65. They link back to all of the different standards that Illinois as a state has put out and that the district has put out, linking back specifically to the equity standards. I can say, you know, we've been in this K-12 fight now specifically since the fall of 2020. And in all of the lesson plans that have come across our desk, I've never seen as detailed lesson plans as I have in District 65 with respect to what they're going to teach, links to the PowerPoints, links to the videos, links to the books. District 65 wears it loud and proud. And so we've had the opportunity to actually see it as parents as to what's happening there. Somebody asked about the blowback against Dr. Demar. As I mentioned, what has happened to her in the past? You know, she deals with this every day. She is still teaching in the school district. Throughout the time of these lawsuits, she went out and got her doctorate degree. And so, you know, she has pressed forward because at the end of the day, if teachers don't stand up and let parents know what's happening in the classroom, and if parents don't hopefully join in those fights, we aren't going to be able to stop any racial segregation and discrimination that's happening in these school districts. Now, of course, these are alleged flat facts, but based off of the 2021 finding that these facts, at least prior to that, did actually occur, right? There's a formal finding here with respect to those facts. We can point to those because we know that this is happening and it's happening all across our country. It's even happening in red states, in certain school districts. And so, you know, we all need to remember that our Constitution is colorblind and that when it needs to be enforced, groups are here to enforce it. I've got, let's see, a few other questions that have come in here. Let's see, a few comments about District 65. See those. Question about the Department of Education. Largely, and that if the Department of Education is disbanded, what effect will this have? Well, our laws are our laws. We have our civil rights laws. They are enacted by Congress. The Department of Education then, through the Office of Civil Rights, has the power to go ahead and investigate these and implement them. As somebody referenced earlier, we have the Office of Civil Rights and we have the Department of Justice. And so it's not just these civil rights complaints that can happen. If these rise to the level that the DOJ sees fit, lawsuits can also be brought there, as we've seen in the Title IX context. And so these fights and these challenges are certainly not going to go away, regardless of what happens with the Department of Education as a department. There are some questions in here about timing. When do we expect to get answers and for the investigation to wrap up? Honestly, we don't know. The facts are there. There's already a lot of findings from 2021. The facts have continued. The law hasn't changed. Our Civil Rights Act is the same today that it was then. Obviously, there's additional guidance documents and such coming out, but this complaint does not rely on Dear Colleague letters. It does not rely on guidance documents. It's right there. Plain black letter law, what's in our Constitution and what's in our Civil Rights Act. And so we would hope and anticipate that the department moves swiftly and quickly here, and that it will issue a finding and that District 65 will stop segregating students and teachers and stop this racially hostile environment. So with that, I think that's the last question that I see there. Marco, I don't know if you have anything that you want to wrap us up. Otherwise, I will close us out.
Well, thank you, Kim, for that fantastic presentation and the benefit of your time and expertise today. On behalf of the Federalist Society, I'd also like to thank you, our audience, for joining us. We greatly appreciate your participation. For more information on more upcoming events, please visit our website or all major social media platforms at FedSoc. Any final words, Kim?
Nope, just appreciate everyone watching today and keep a close eye on this case. We think it's going to be a big one.
Excellent. On that note, we are adjourned. Thank you all again.
Thank you for listening to this episode of FedSoc Forums, a podcast of the Federal Society's Practice Groups. For more information about the Federal Society, the Practice Groups, and to become a Federal Society member, please visit our website at fedsoc.org.